Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about deposits, redeposits. Should we? Should we not? And why some people call this buybacks. And we have James Marshall on the phone. I was going to say he's right in front of me. He's not. He was smart enough. He was 2 hours away, backed up in traffic to say, why don't I pull over and get on a landline and call in? Good morning, James.
Hey, good morning, Bob. How can you hear me?
Perfect. Perfect.
Good, good. Yeah, I've got to love this D.C. area traffic. I actually came in from Charlotte, North Carolina last night about 2 a.m., got a few hours of sleep and thought I'd have plenty of time to get into town. But you know, sometimes if you don't give yourself 3 hours to get somewhere in the D.C. area, you just don't make it sometimes.
Well, you were very smart to pull over because doing this on cell phones sometimes isn't so good. Anyway, James Marshall is a federal benefits expert. He's a fellow seminar presenter with NITP. All-around good guy. Were you a chopper pilot in the service?
Yeah, I was. I spent a few years flying helicopters in the Army. I certainly did.
All right. So born and bred, all-American. You can tell he's from the North. Or is it the South?
Oh, yeah, sure.
All righty, James. What's a deposit or what's a redeposit? Why would I make a deposit? Is that kind of like where you used to take deposits on beer bottles?
Well, not really. Nothing to do with beer bottles, although you might want to have a beer after we talk about today. But, you know, maybe in a few minutes we can get into more why would someone pay it, but let's talk about what it is. You know, there's this bucket of money that the Office of Personnel Management uses. I'll call them OPM for the rest of the session. You know, OPM, they're the folks who manage your retirement system, the pension plans under the federal government. So there's this bucket of money called the Civil Service Retirement and Disability Fund that OPM uses to pay pensions under both FERS and CSRS, as well as survivor benefits. And most of the folks that are probably listening to today's radio show, they're probably either CSRS or FERS today, and whether they know it or not, they're having a certain amount of their pay being withheld automatically. You know, there's no choice in the matter. It's mandatory withholding based on their position. They're either FERS or CSRS, and of course we have some CSRS offset folks. So they're having a certain percentage of their pay being withheld, basic pay, going into this bucket to pay for their future pension. And once you've got 5 years of service, of paying, you know, civilian service, paying into this bucket, you're vested. It doesn't mean you're old enough to collect your pension yet, but you're vested. And so, but there's some service, there's some periods of federal service, both civilian and military, that might be creditable under CSRS or FERS. But in most cases, if there's no money in the bucket to get credit for the service might not be used in the computation of your pension, or it might not even be used for retirement eligibility. Maybe we can get into some of those details in a few minutes.
Okay, let me make sure I understand that somebody works for Uncle and merrily goes along figuring that they are, each year that they work, they're getting, quote, credit. But there could be years where there was none of this mandatory withholding?
That's correct. There's some appointments that you might have or someone may have had at the beginning of their federal career where they weren't paying into CSRS or FERS. Like there's some appointments that are exempt from CSRS coverage, like temporary positions not expected to last more than a year. Term appointments are examples of positions that you're not allowed to be CSRS unless you transferred into one of those positions from a CSRS position without a break in service. There's some, you know, temporary appointments you're not allowed to be a FERS employee in most cases until you get a permanent position. You know, sometimes you're under what's called FICA only. FICA only means you're only paying Social Security taxes. And when you get a personnel action or an SF-50 working as a federal employee, there's a retirement code on there that tells you whether or not you're CSRS or FERS or FICA only. And if you see FICA only, that means that's called deposit service. In order to get credit 100% under your pension for that service, you would make what's called a deposit into the bucket of money that OPM uses to pay that pension. So that way it's creditable for retirement purposes.
James, can I ask you a question? We're coming up to the summer, and some people become summer interns. Does a summer intern have this withholding from them such that 30 years from now they would say, well, gee, if I made a deposit of money that was not withheld, I could pick up, well, I guess 4 years of this, three months a year, it's a year's worth of service. Do they have that type of money withheld from them?
In most cases, they don't, but it depends on how they're hired. There are some folks who stay on board with an agency from year to year. You know, for example, all through college, they might be on the agency rolls for 4 years, but they're put in a non-pay status, for example, when they go back to work. I mean, when they go back to school full time. But it just depends on the hiring appointment. If it was a temporary position, not expected to last more than a year, it's unlikely that they would be under FERS. Now, unfortunately, the rules, which we'll get into more detail as we go through this radio show program, the rules are different for FERS and CSRS. If you hire someone today and you put them under an appointment that is exempt from FERS coverage, where they only pay Social Security taxes, if they ever become a FERS employee later, they won't be allowed under the current law to pay a deposit. The service won't be used for retirement purposes. It could be used for leave accrual purposes, you know, to determine whether they're accruing 4, 6, or 8 hours of annual leave per pay period. But unfortunately, under the current FERS law, you cannot make a deposit for federal civilian service if it was performed after December 31st of 1988, with the exception of Peace Corps and VISTA service.
All righty. So we're talking about here a deposit that is being put in because nothing was withheld for whatever reason during a period of time versus a redeposit. And correct me if I'm wrong, because this is your area, not mine. A redeposit would be somebody who left federal service and felt that they would not come back and they took the money out of the system, which I believe they're free to do, but then changed their mind later on and came back to federal service. And that's a redeposit. Am I right with that?
I believe you got it right. You can't touch that money that's in that bucket. You know, this bucket of money is called the Civil Service Retirement Disability Fund. It's not to be confused with TSP, of course, the Thrift Savings Plan. This bucket of money, you can't touch it unless you leave the federal government. And when you leave the federal government, if you take that money out, with very few exceptions, you'll forfeit your pension. And your pension, you know, is going to be more valuable in most cases. But if you do return to federal service under a covered position, see, that's a difference between a covered appointment and these jobs that you just talked about where they might not be covered. You have to return to a covered position. If you took the money out to begin with because you had a break in service of more than 3 days, if you took your money out, you would have to return to a covered position before you're allowed to put it back in. That's very important to remember. Some folks, you know, a lot of folks ask that question. Well, I took my money out 10 years ago. I have not been rehired. I don't see myself being rehired. Can I put the money back in? The answer is no. You got to be rehired under a covered position before you're allowed to put it back in. But that's why they call it redeposit service, is when you do return to federal service, if you want to get credit or if you feel the need that it's a good investment, which we'll talk about later, you could put the money back in once you have a covered position.
In today's world of more mobile employment, if you will, somebody works for Uncle and then decides they don't want to and they leave, they take the money out of the system, say, gee, I'd like to go back. Timing-wise, are they advised when they come back into federal service? Again, this is somebody that did work for federal service, had the withholding, left federal service, and took the withholding out. How quickly are they advised that they can do it?
Well, you know, the folks that are being rehired today, agencies are doing a better job than what they've done in the past. In the past, most folks who got rehired, like I'm talking about when I say the past, like 5 years ago or longer, if you were rehired 5 years ago or longer ago, you probably weren't told anything about your refunded service when you got hired. They just didn't have it built into their onboarding process. Most employees aren't told about this stuff. They're not even aware of it until they take a class, you know, a retirement training class, which is sometimes a year or two before they separate, which I think is a little late in the game. But then they find out at the last minute they owe not only what they took out, but they also owe some interest that we can talk about later. You know, Uncle Sam wants his money back plus interest, the money that he would have made off of that money had he not taken out to begin with. So they don't always do a good job of telling folks when you come back on board, oh, by the way, you owe this much, and if you don't pay it, this is what will happen to your pension.
Okay, so why don't we drill into it, if it's okay. Let's do the deposit first rather than the redeposit. I don't think it's any different in theory, but it's different for a different reason. So a deposit would be, I want to put the money in because I didn't have it withheld because at the time it wasn't covered service. Is that the proper terminology?
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. If you want to make the deposit, in a little bit we can share some examples of when it's more favorable than others to make these deposits. And we also later will get into military service because that's another example of deposit service. When I was in the military, I was not paying into FERS, for example. You know, so we'll talk about that later. But you know, you can make this deposit to get credit for it. And mainly what you're doing is you're affecting your retirement service computation date, or SCD. retirement STD is not always the same as a leave STD, so people have to be aware of that because they see their leave STD all the time. You know, when they get their statement of earnings and leave every pay period, or when they get an SF50 personnel actions, they see their leave STD everywhere, but they don't always see their retirement STD.
What's an SED?
An SED is a tool that your agency uses to determine length of service for different purposes. You know, for example, I'll give you a quick example. I had 10 years in the military. You know, I did not retire from the military. I had 10 years in the military, and I had 3 months of temporary service when I was in junior high. I can go into a long story on that later, but I was working when I was sixth grade. I was working for the federal government, believe it or not. So I got 3 months and 10 years of service. And years later, when I got hired as a FERS employee, it was my responsibility during the onboarding process to claim all prior federal, civilian, and military service. And so when I provided that information to my agency, they got my DD-214 showing my 10 years of honorable active duty, and they got my went to St. Louis, and they got my little tiny OPF with four pieces of paper in it from when I worked for the National Park Service, and they merged that with my current official personnel folder, and they subtracted 10 years and 3 months from my entered on duty date as a FERS employee, and I was automatically receiving for free, didn't cost me a dime, 6 hours of annual leave per pay period instead of the typical 4 hours. So for free, you know, it was part of my leave STD. But until I pay a deposit into FERS for that service will not be used for retirement purposes. And there's two things to consider when you're talking about your retirement STD, on paying deposits or not. Number one, when am I going to be eligible to retire? You know, in another show, we can talk about all the various age and service requirements that must be met to be eligible to start collecting your pension. The more service you have, the younger you can be to collect your pension. The less service you have, the longer you have to wait, you know, the older you have to be. So by paying this deposit, number one, it might allow you to collect a pension a lot sooner in life. It might allow you to move on from the federal government career to some other career sooner if you pay your deposit. And number two, you get more money for the rest of your life because it's also that service will be used in the computation of your pension. Because under FERS, if there's no money in that bucket of money to use to pay your pension for any prior service, that service will not be used for retirement eligibility or the computation of your pension.
All righty. And we're going to talk numbers in a, not mind-numbing numbers, but we'll talk numbers as to what it really means. But how soon does one have to make the deposit? Do they have to do it by the time they retire? Do they have a certain month, number of months after they retire? Can they do it any time after they retire? Can they do it before they retire?
Well, they do have between now and the time they retire from the federal government. Now, however, military service, we'll talk about more detail later, military service deposits can only be paid while you're working at an agency under a FERS or CSRS-covered position. So keep that in mind. You have to pay those deposits before you separate from your agency. But other deposits and redeposits can be paid after you separate. For example, if you're waiting on an OPM to bill you because it's taking over a year for OPM to bill people right now for deposit and redeposits for civilian service, you know, they can, part of the adjudication of your retirement, they can allow you to make that deposit for civilian service after you separate. Or if you separate mid-career, as long as you don't take your money out of FERS or CSRS and you're walking out the door, for example, in your mid-40s because you've got a wonderful job opportunity waiting for you in the private sector, you're still allowed to pay deposits and redeposits after you separate. See, there's a difference in what I said earlier. You know, earlier I said if you take all your money out, if you don't return, you're not allowed to put the money back in. But here's a situation where someone walks out. They don't take their money out, but they still owe a deposit or redeposit from service a long time ago. They're allowed to pay those civilian deposits later, but for military service has to be paid before you separate. So that's the timeline. You got between now and the time that you retire, essentially, to pay your deposits and redeposits.
Okay, but the non-military, they would get a bill?
Yeah, you know, the process, the application is the same for military and civilian. For FERS, it's called the Standard Form 3108, and for CSRS, it's the Standard Form 2803. Maybe what we can do is, once we're done with the show today, I can provide you guys with some web links that people can access. Anything we reference on the Internet today, we can maybe put that as part of the description later. But those are the applications that you apply through your agency initially. You apply through your agency benefits office. Every agency has a benefits officer or an office that employees can go through to initiate their applications. And so if it's a military deposit, the agency will bill the employee for that and give them the options to either pay it in full or have it withheld from their pay. But if it's a civilian deposit or redeposit, the agency will certify the application and they'll forward it to OPM, and OPM will bill the employee directly. Now, It could take a year. You know, and some folks have been waiting for over a year to get their bill from OPM because they're a little bit backlogged right now, and all the folks that have applied in the years past. So when they get the bill, though, it's between that employee and OPM. And every time the employee sends in a payment, they'll get a new statement from OPM saying that showing their new balance due plus any interest that may have accrued. And so, and once they get finally pay that deposit off with OPM, and they get a final statement that says balance due zero, OPM does not tell the agency that that deposit has been paid in full. So if it were me, if I just got finished paying off my deposit or redeposit with OPM, I would make a courtesy copy of this document and provide it to my agency benefits office so that way my agency knows that I've already paid that deposit or redeposit. But that's essentially how the process will work, though, when people apply to make these deposits.
All right. How would an individual know that they could even pay a deposit? In other words, they weren't covered. Are they advised that they weren't covered under something years ago?
Unfortunately, a lot of folks don't find out until they start getting retirement estimates from their agencies. And some agencies won't even provide a retirement estimate or even let them take a retirement class until they're within 5 years. And meanwhile, all this, you know, 5 years for their retirement, meanwhile, all this interest has been growing. So most folks aren't even aware that they owe a deposit or redeposit until later on in their careers. But I have two tips here. I advise, number one, get a retirement estimate from your agency. That retirement estimate should show whether or not you have any unpaid deposit or redeposit service. But if you work at one of those few agencies that don't give you retirement estimates, or if you have to wait in line for a year or two to get an estimate because there's so many people waiting, or if your agency says that, you know, we'll take care of that later, you can always ask for a certified summary of federal service. And again, maybe we can provide a link to this, but for FERS folks, it's a standard form 3107-1. It's a standard form 3107-1, and the CSRS is a standard form 2801-1. And so what it is, it's a summary of your federal career, and it would show you whether or not you have any unpaid deposit or redeposit service. And it gives you a lot more details as well. It's a really good document that I recommend that anybody in the middle of their careers, well before, I mean, we're talking about a couple of decades before you retire, get this document from your agency. And that way you can verify, number one, if you have any unpaid deposit or redeposit service, and number two, you know, that your agency has all your service documented properly, because now is the time to catch any mistakes or errors. If more people would get their summaries of federal service during the middle of their careers, there would be less headaches and less people waiting for months or even sometimes a year or longer to get their annuity process. OPM, one of their biggest complaints about agencies submitting retirement paperwork is that the agency did not do a good job of maintaining that person's service history. And so folks aren't finding out to the last minute that they have unpaid deposit or redeposit service, or maybe the service is missing altogether from their official personnel folder.
All righty. Interest rates, both of these seem to have a long-term, I guess, unknown to them. If somebody doesn't know how long this is going on, but if we have to make the deposit or the redeposit and pay interest on it, do the interest rates fluctuate over the years?
Well, it depends on what kind of deposit redeposit service we're discussing, and it also depends on whether it's civilian or military, and also depends on whether it's FERS and CSRS. I mean, those are three different examples of why the interest rules are different. But to keep it simple, for FERS, it's a variable interest rate. You know, it's a variable interest rate that changes from year to year. That's determined by the Department of Treasury.
But it's based on some.
It's been less than 3%.
It's based on some interest rate in the environment.
Yeah, it's based on the interest rates, which is determined by the Department of Treasury.
Okay.
But the good news is for FERS, it doesn't compound or accrue daily. It's an annual interest that grows. For civilian service, it's on January 1st of each year.
So it's kind of simple interest. It's just,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the Reagan years were pretty high, but before 1985, it was a fixed 3% interest rate. But for CSRS, it's a little bit more complicated because they have different periods of service that fall before or after October 1st of 1982. If it was on or after October 1st, 1982, it's a 3% interest rate until 1985, and that's where the variable interest rate kicks in. But if it was before October 1st of 1982, that deposit or redeposit service is a fixed 3% interest rate. But unfortunately, when it's a fixed 3% interest rate, the interest grows on a daily basis, which can really compound over time.
Okay.
That's why a lot of folks, when they find out how much they owe, they usually owe six or seven times as much as the original deposit.
So then, if we've got the deposit, defined, if you will, interest rate somewhat defined. But somebody comes and says, okay, you owe this much in a deposit. And when they give you this figure, does it include the interest, or do they say the deposit is X and the interest is Y and you owe X plus Y?
Yeah, they usually give you all three. They usually show you how much your original deposit was, they show you how much interest is accrued to date, and then they show you what your total amount due if you want to pay it off in full.
Okay, and then at that point, the individual has to say, I'm going to have to find this money someplace. I'm going to have to write a check to OPM, and then I'll get a greater annuity for the rest of my life. And I suppose this would extend then to a survivor's annuity as well, if there is a survivor's annuity. Am I right with that?
That is correct, although there's some exceptions for unpaid redeposit service under CSRS. For example, there's a reason why a lot of folks under CSRS don't pay for any redeposit service for service that ended prior to March 1st of 1991, because they still get credit for it for free in the computation of their pension. In other words, they still get 2% of their high three average salary for each year of service that was refunded prior to March 1st, 1991. And if they don't pay it off, they take a small yet permanent actuarial reduction, where if they paid it, it would take them probably 15 to 20 years to get their money back from OPM. So they tend to just take a small reduction, even though they're getting money for the rest of their life for free, they take a small yet permanent reduction. But the good news is, if that person, if that CSRS retiree passes away, even though they didn't pay that redeposit for service that ended prior to March 1st, 1991, it does not affect the survivor benefit. It's deemed paid in full, effective the date of death of the retiree. There's more details about that. I'll give you some references later on OPM's website where people can read about that. But that's one example. That's an exception to the rule where it doesn't actually affect the survivor. So that's one reason why a lot of folks under CSRS don't pay back their redeposit service.
Okay.
With FERS, it's a little different. FERS, if I don't pay that redeposit back, I don't get credit for it, and neither does my surviving spouse if I pass away before them. And the good news is they changed the law in 2009. The references will give, refer to this handbook that was written back in the late 90s, but one update to the FERS redeposit service effective 2009 was that you're allowed to put money back into FERS, where it used to be you weren't. If you took your money out of FERS before 2009, you forfeited that service forever, even if you returned to the FERS cover position later. But now you're allowed to put that money back in. That might help some people in today's class. When you were rehired in the 80s or 90s, for example, they told you, you can't pay that money back, but now you can. So that may be a benefit for some folks.
Okay, so then just generally we sit down and I come to you and I said, James, I've got this and I have to put this much money in, principal and interest. What do you advise? I'm not putting you on the spot that this is global information for everybody to take, but what would you look at to advise me whether it makes sense or not? I might say, gee, if I have to put this much money up, it has to come out of my investment pool, and then I won't be able to make as much on my investments. Is there kind of a break even? And, of course, nobody knows how long they're going to live either. So.
Yeah. In most situations, especially on the FERS, because remember, if you don't pay it, you don't get credit. In most situations, it's a wonderful investment, and there's very hard to find a better deal elsewhere. There's no guarantees elsewhere, whereas this is a guaranteed increase to your pension. There's exceptions for CSRS, but for FERS, it's usually you get that money back within the first 2 or 3 years, sometimes within the first 12 months. Where else can you invest, for example, $5,000 and get $5,000 a year for the rest of your life? I don't know of any investment fund out there that can do that for you. But under FERS, it happens every day. When people make their FERS deposits, they may owe three times as much in interest. I owed interest all the way back to the midpoint of when I was in junior high, because I wasn't even allowed to pay the deposit until I became a FERS employee many years later. So I owed five times as much in interest. Now, my deposit wasn't $5,000. It was only $130. The original deposit before interest was $25. But I paid the $130 because I'm going to get $30 a month for the rest of my life in my future FERS pension. Where else can I invest $130 and get $30 a month for the rest of my life? So that's just a small example. Some folks owe $5,000 or $6,000 for unpaid deposit service under FERS, but they might be increasing their pension by $5,000 or $6,000 a year. So the break-even point is usually within 12 months in most cases. Sometimes it might take a little bit longer because if the service was performed a long time ago, they owe a little bit more in interest. But still, the break-even point, I've never really seen it take much more than 5 years to break even in most cases. And there's exceptions for those folks that are retired from the military. We can cover that later.
Okay. And just an aside, tax-wise, the money that we're going to deposit or redeposit will become a tax deduction once the money starts to be paid to us in the form of an annuity. The tax deduction, while not large, nonetheless helps soften the blow, but it's not a huge deduction because it's spread out over a lifetime. All righty, let's turn the phones on now for the folks listening that would like to call in. We would love to hear from them. 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. The subject is deposits, redeposits. Should you not? How does it work? I think we covered how it works. And we're on the phone with James Marshall, federal benefits expert, fellow NITP retirement seminar presenter. And me, Bob Lines, I'm learning. I'm a tax finance type. So 202-465-3080. Okay, James, until the phones start ringing, hopefully off the hook, we were just at the point to say, okay, economically, does this make sense? Does this not make sense? And you jumped all over it regarding FERS. It looks like it's a pretty good deal. What's the difference between it and the CSRS person?
Well, CSRS, while we're still talking about civilian, because we'll cover the military stuff later, but civilian stuff, it just depends on when that service was performed and whether it was deposit or redeposit service. So I'll give you some quick examples. In most cases, if I'm CSRS or offset, or if I'm a FERS transferee, you know, and I have a CSRS component in my annuity, but I owe an unpaid deposit under CSRS rules, if that deposit or temporary appointment, for example, was performed prior to October 1st, 1982, the investment is not that great. It doesn't give you such a great return because for free, you're already getting credit for your civilian service. See, the rules are different for CSRS and FERS. You know, all civilian service, number one, under CSRS is creditable for retirement eligibility, you know, in your retirement SD to determine whether you're eligible to retire or not. Civilian service, it's not true for military with an exception I'll cover in a little bit. But civilian service is all part of your retirement eligibility. And it's also used in the computation of your pension if that deposit service was performed prior to October 1st, 1982. So why would I pay it if I'm already getting money for free? Well, the answer is it depends on a couple of things. You know, how much are you going to get? That's the next question you always ask your agency. Once you find out how much you owe for something, you ask, well, how does that impact my pension? What do I get if I pay this? Well, if I owe $500 and they're only going to increase my annuity by $5 a month, I don't know if I would do that. But that's an example of what you might expect to see. You know, why would I want to pay $500 to get $5 a month? Now, how did I come up with this $5 a month? Well, what they do is they, when you retire and you have unpaid deposit service under CSRS, you know, that was performed prior to October 1st, 1982, OPM calculates how much you owe effective date of your retirement, including interest. And they take that amount, for example, it's, you know, maybe I owe $5,000, and they multiply that times 10%. You know, 10% of $5,000 is $500 a year. That's how much they're going to reduce my annuity, is $500 a year. Is it worth it for me to pay this $5,000 to get that extra $500? It would take me 10 years to pay myself back. I can put $5,000.
Okay, James. I don't mean to cut you. There's a very patient caller on the phone.
Oh, okay. And but you see where I was going with that.
I know where you were going, but I didn't want the caller to go somewhere else. So, good morning, caller.
Yes, I have a question. I have been in civil service for 34 years, and I just called for a printout to see what my retirement was going to be and found out that I owed $4,000 for a season when I worked in Germany in 1998. You know, and it's upsetting. So I thought, should I pay back the $5,000 or should I just put some money away every month? I'm confused as whether I should pay it back.
So you're currently CSRS.
Because I didn't pay. Correct? Yes, sir. I didn't pay Social Security.
Okay. But this, you're talking about 1998. You were in a position where you weren't paying into CSRS.
Oh yeah, I was paying into CSRS. I wasn't paying Social Security.
Okay, but what do you owe $5,000 for? What period of time are you talking about?
Let's see. I'm trying to. From 88. Oh wait, no, wait, no. I worked over in Germany in 1980 to 83.
Gotcha. Okay. So, and during that time is whenever you were perhaps not CSRS. Maybe you were only paying Social Security taxes. If you double check, you can double check your statements from Social Security, and you probably see that if you owe something for that time, because you've never left the federal government. Is that correct? You've never left since you started?
I have never left.
Okay. And so if you're telling me that your agency is telling you that you owe some money for time between 80 and 83, it's very likely that was a type of position that was exempt from CSRS coverage. And when you're under those type of appointments, unless you're in the legislative branch, which it doesn't sound like you are, you're in the executive branch.
I am.
So that in that case, it would be called deposit service. So it was probably FICA only. And you can double check your Social Security
statement. FICA only. That is correct. It was FICA only.
And it could have been the one of the few years in your life where you paid Social Security taxes was during that appointment.
Right.
It sounds like you have some time that's a little bit before and after October 1st, 82. So here's what I would recommend based on what you're telling me. I would find out exactly how much do I owe before the service that was that ended on October 1st, 82. Now, nothing ended on that date. Just keep in mind that's, you know, a different type of deposit. And then I would want to find out how much do I owe for my temporary appointment that started on October 1st, 82, but ended in 1983. You see, you have two different deposit amounts that you need to look at.
Oh.
Your agency should break that down for you.
If they haven't, so what if I don't pay anything back? What if I don't pay anything back? I'll be missing how much? Okay.
Well, you'll get credit in the computation of your pension for the time between 1980 and October 1st, 82. But for the, you know, actually until September 30th of 82, but starting on October 1st, 82, until you got converted to CSRS later in 1983, that time, if you don't pay that part of the deposit, you won't get anything in the computation of your pension for that service. So my advice is to find out how much you owe separately for your pre and post October 1st, 82 deposit service, and ask your agency to provide you with two estimates. One estimate if you pay nothing, and then one estimate if you pay your post 10-182 deposit service, but not the pre. Because I think you're going to see that it's not going to be worth paying the pre. You're going to see it's going to be such a small reduction to your annuity for not paying the pre 10-182 deposit. You're probably going to say, "Well, I can put that money in a cookie jar and pay myself for the next 10 years.
Yes,
or I can invest the money elsewhere."
It totaled like $28 less a month for me.
Yeah, for the unpaid $4,000 or $5,000.
Right.
Yeah,
so with that, I could invest the $28. With that, I can invest the $28 elsewhere, couldn't I?
Well, you can invest the $5,000 elsewhere and maybe give yourself $28 a month the rest of your life. You know,
yeah,
depends on where it's invested. But,
right.
you know, you don't get credit at all for the time between October 1st, 82, and the day you got converted in 1983 unless you pay that part of the deposit. That's why I'm saying that you might want to pay that part because you'll see the difference in your annuity. Remember, you're asking for two estimates. One estimate if I pay nothing. You've already got that. But you need another estimate to show you what you would get if you just pay that post 9/30/82 deposit, you know, just that one little part of that deposit time. And I think you're going to see that the increase in your pension is going to be worth paying that small amount.
Okay. Very helpful. Very helpful. Don't go away. We need you. Thank you.
I'll be here. We'll all be here whenever you need it.
Okay. He's not going away because he's got another call. Thank you for calling. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I made a military deposit to a former agency, and my current agency, of course, has no record. Well, I shouldn't say, of course, has no record of that payment. Is my former agency responsible for letting OPM know that I made that deposit, or who's responsible for what at this point?
Well, your former agency is responsible for informing OPM that you paid your military deposit. Are you FERS or CSRS?
I'm FERS.
Okay, so if you want to write this down, it's a standard form 3100.
3100.
What that is, it's an individual retirement record. And anytime an employee transfers from one agency to another agency, the old payroll office at your old agency takes all your contributions that you paid into FERS as a civilian employee, as well as any military deposits you paid, and they forward that on a record called a 3100 to OPM. And OPM has that on file. They should.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I would do is I would contact OPM. You can either ask your agency benefits office for assistance, or you can write OPM using their email address. Here's their email address. It's retire. At opm.gov.
At opm.gov. Okay.
Yeah, and request a copy of all your prior SF-3100 documents. And so that will, one of those documents, one of those SF-3100s should be your military deposit paid in full, because you paid in full, correct?
I did.
That's where it should be on file.
I actually have made two deposits, one many years ago in the 90s that is recorded, and then a couple years ago I made a deposit just for reserve active duty time, and that's the one that was made to the former department that my current department has no record of.
Gotcha.
So you're saying that OPM should have a record of both of these, frankly.
Because you paid them both with the prior agency, is that correct?
With the prior agency, yes.
Okay, yeah, both 3100s would be on file at OPM. They should be there. If they're not, that's where you may have to go back to your old agency and say what happened. You know, they may have to do some research, but it's rare. Usually what happens is when you contact OPM and you finally get them to respond to you, you'll get a copy of the 3100s, and it'll show all your active duty time paid that you paid in the past with prior agencies. It should be on file. If you have trouble, you run into any issues, contact us at NITP, and we can try to provide you some guidance and assist you with getting these records. But your agency is responsible for helping you, but your agency doesn't have that information right now because your prior agency forwarded all that to OPM. And they, you know, OPM did not give any guidance to any agencies to show when someone pays their military deposit to put something in their OPF. There's nothing in the official personnel folder guidance for personnelists to put anything in there. There's no proof. It's up to us as employees, unfortunately, to keep track of all these records.
Mm-hmm.
And agencies don't always give you a copy of things that are paid in full. So my advice is just contact OPM in this case and get those 3100s. You should have everything you need.
Wonderful.
And then provide that to your current agency, and then they can show that it's paid in full. If I was your current agency retirement officer, I would contact OPM on your behalf just because I need that information. And in my opinion, that's my job. But if your agency doesn't do that for you, you can contact OPM directly.
Excellent. Thank you so, so much.
Yep, you're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right, James, and hopefully the caller is still listening. If there was some debate as to whether it was made or not, and I'm not suggesting that it wasn't, if one has a copy of the check that was written, I'd imagine that would help an awful lot, even if
that's
we don't.
Start.
Okay.
That's a start, certainly. But some of these folks don't write checks. Some of these folks have payroll deductions withheld.
Okay.
And they don't have a check, so all they have is their statement of earnings and leave. So when you pay off a military deposit, it usually reflects on your statement of earnings and leave at the agency you're working at, where you pay it. And, of course, when you go to a new agency, it doesn't show it anymore. But I would keep that last statement of earnings and leave like it's a piece of gold, because that's another evidence, piece of evidence, just in case OPM loses the record or your agency doesn't submit it to OPM. If that record's not found, it can still be proof that you paid your military deposit already.
All righty. Now, if we switch gears a little bit to the redeposit. We come back to, we took the money out of the system and left federal service. We come back, and let's say we are advised that we can make a redeposit, but for whatever reason, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
The amount that we would then have to pay at retirement is going to be greater than what it would have been had we paid it when we came back to federal service. Is that a fair summary?
Sure, because the interest continues to grow until the day until the day you retire from the federal government, the interest continues to grow.
Okay. Now, does the redeposit, if you were to separate the two between a deposit and a redeposit, is the redeposit more expensive to the person?
Well, the redeposit, first of all, I mean, it can be. We'll see. Let me think about that for a moment. Under FERS, it might not be, because under FERS, you're paying less than 1% of your basic pay. To be a FERS employee. So if you pay that money back plus interest, you know, that's one thing. You know, less than 1% of your pay plus interest. But if it's a FERS deposit, as opposed to a FERS redeposit, it might be a little bit more expensive because you owe 1.3% of your base pay. That's what I owed. I owed 1.3% of my $3 an hour, or whatever the hourly rate was back then, for my unpaid deposit. Actually, it was like $2 an hour. But you know, because I owe 1.3% versus 0.8%, you know, 1.3% plus interest, you know, same interest rates, but obviously 1.3 is bigger than 0.8. So, yeah, in FERS, a deposit is going to be a little bit more expensive than a redeposit, you know, when everything else is equal, you know, the service being service dates being the same years and stuff. But let me think about that for a moment for CSRS. Deposit versus redeposit should be about the same, with the exception of redeposit interest goes back to the date that you took the money out, whereas deposit service, unfortunately, the interest goes back to the midpoint of when you owed the deposit. So under CSRS, I'm guessing a redeposit would be a little bit cheaper. I mean, just a small amount because the way the interest is accrued than a deposit, you know, under CSRS. But we're talking about a minor amount of money, which really the key is still going back to what am I going to get if I pay this money versus what do I get if I don't pay the money to determine if it's a good investment or not. But yeah, the longer you wait, you know, if you're under the variable interest rates, what some folks are doing, they're going to wait to the last minute. Now, what I tell people, you know, because the interest rates are so low right now, they'd rather keep their money where it is. If I owe $10,000 for something and I'm getting a 3% return wherever it might be sitting, you know, I don't mind the interest growing at 1.5 or 2.25% or less than 3% for the next few years. I'll wait to the last minute. But if I owe a civilian deposit, or redeposit, I'm going to get in line. It doesn't cost me anything to apply because it could take OPM a year to bill me. But when I'm ready, I can pay the deposit. But I can let my money grow a little bit longer. So when it comes to the current interest rates, they're really low right now. So some folks who owe deposits or redeposits, especially if it's a lot of money, they'd rather make some money off of it for the next couple of years while they're working. And they don't mind paying a little bit extra in interest. Does that make sense? Does that kind of answer?
Yeah, perfect. You know, because you approach this from the very, you know, this and that, and I approach it from an investment side, and I think I got my answers, and hopefully the callers can look at it both ways as well. By the way, the caller is 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080, and those two calls were very good. One reached way back when, and the other one involved the military folks, correct?
Yeah,
so,
right.
Couldn't ask for much better than that.
But that's a good point that you made, Bob. I always remind folks that I'm not a financial advisor. I'm just somebody who understands all these quirky laws and regulations.
Boy, don't you.
Federal benefits. But I encourage them, you know, once they find out that they have it, you know, because that's the first thing is, do you even have deposit or redeposit service? If you don't, you can ignore this entire show today unless you're helping out a friend. But if you do have it, you know, the next question for free you get from your agency is, how much do I owe? And then the third question for free you get from your agency is, well, what happens if I pay it and what will happen if I don't pay it? And once you have the answer to those three questions, you can go do your own financial planning or go talk to a financial planner and find out, is this the best thing for me or is there something better that I can, you know, if I owe this much money, where's the best place to put this money, you know, to give me a nice return in retirement? Or do I even care to have this money in retirement? And that's really going to be a personal decision that everybody has to make on their own.
I suppose health would play into this. Somebody may be older at retirement, not to say that they're of ill health, but if they have a shorter life expectancy, then the decision to put the money back in becomes a little bit more painstaking.
That's certainly another factor that needs to be considered. Especially if you only have a few months to live. But if you have a few years to live, remember the break-even point in many cases is less than a year for a lot of these folks. But, you know, how much money do you really need? You know, that's the other issue. So I can get my money back within a year. Do I really need the money? You know, that's another issue. But also survivor benefits. Let's not forget that. If it's going to improve my survivor benefit for my spouse and she plans on outliving me by many, many years, that's another consideration to take into account.
Okay, we got another consideration with a caller. Good morning.
Nice. Good morning. How are you doing?
Everything's good. What can we do for you?
Quick question. I'm a CSRS offset, and my concern is specifically when the time comes to put in the paperwork for retirement. My understanding is that I have to separately coordinate and file on my own individually with Social Security, and that my payroll office at my agency will handle the civil service OPM portion. Would it also be a correct understanding that in actuality I will be getting two separate pension checks, one from Social Security and one from OPM?
That is correct. You collect your Social Security benefit direct deposit from Social Security, and of course you collect your pension, CSRS offset pension, direct deposit from OPM. Now let me ask you a quick question, though. Will you be 62 or older when you retire?
Well, I'm going to be 66 next month.
Gotcha. Yeah, so it's really up to you. No one's forcing you to apply for Social Security. You don't have to apply for Social Security just because you're retiring from the federal government. You know, keep that in mind as well. You can wait a little bit longer, or you can do something I'll share with you in a moment. If you're married, you can actually, depending upon how old your wife is.
But my wife is not old enough to file for Social Security as yet. But also my understanding is because of offset that regardless of whether I file for Social Security benefits, OPM will ding me, will reduce my pension to the extent that at the time I retire, my eligibility for Social Security benefits would be reduced on my OPM side of my federal pension.
Yeah, it is very true that OPM is going to apply a reduction or an offset to your pension as soon as you retire, whether you apply for Social Security or not. And that's a good point. It's up to you, but the point that I was making is you don't have to apply for Social Security. You can wait a little bit. I just want to make sure that you're aware that you don't have to.
Oh, yeah.
Some folks wait a little bit longer. It just depends on the scenario, but since your wife is so much younger than you, maybe you'll be ready to collect Social Security. You know, but if you've got another job lined up.
Well, it wasn't so much that, but I was also thinking in the respect that as long as I'm able to forestall filing for Social Security, I can also get, what is it, the deferred benefit bonus that Social Security has if you wait for filing benefits beyond your full retirement age.
That's correct. That's correct. And the good news is the offset or the reduction to your pension is based upon your Social Security year eligible for at the time of retirement. But your Social Security benefit can get bigger the longer you wait. So that's a benefit there. And so all I would do is I would just set up an appointment with Social Security maybe about 4 to 6 months before you retire from CSRS offset and have them show you what you could get if you collected Social Security right there when you turn 66 or whenever you retire from the federal government, for example, or if you were to wait until 70. And then just decide, you know, what do you want? Because you already know your pension amount will be because your agency is already estimating your annuity based on the offset immediately upon retirement. And you can just decide, you know, what's best for you and your family. Remember, the longer you wait to collect Social Security, it might increase a widow's benefit for your spouse if your spouse has a smaller Social Security benefit than you.
The problem is that she's not 62 yet, and she's not even eligible to file as yet.
Yeah, I understand, but my point is that the longer you wait to collect Social Security, I'm not trying to give you advice, I'm just letting you be aware of your options. The longer you wait to collect Social Security, you already are aware of the delayed credits, and you start collecting that bigger Social Security check while you're 70. And let's fast forward another 15 years, you're in your mid-80s. I'm not trying to put you under the ground, but let's say you pass away in your mid-80s. Your spouse starts drawing your Social Security check, and the bigger your Social Security check is, the bigger her widow's benefit for the rest of her life. So that's another consideration when
sure.
it comes to for you deciding, when do I want to apply for Social Security? It's not only what I can get out of the program during my lifetime, but it's also what can my spouse get out of this program if I pass away before her.
Right, exactly. There's certainly a lot of factors to consider. Well, I thank you very much for your time and your thoughts on the matter. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All righty, got three. Let's have four. 202-465-3080. And this is a very good topic and a very detailed topic that I'm sure people are aware of, but maybe not fully aware of. But thanks to this discussion this morning, pass the word along. And by the way, this show is archived on NITPINC.com as well as Federal News Radio. So anyway. So, James, we got about, what, four more minutes, Andrew? So what do we got left that we can do in 4 minutes, James, assuming we don't get a call?
If we don't get a call, I'd like to cover maybe some quick military tips.
Okay.
Military deposit tips. Of course, if you're not retired from the military, in most cases, it's best to pay your deposits. Now, there's an exception for CSRS. If you were hired under CSRS prior to October 1st of 1982, you fall under the Catch-62 rule for your military service if you have unpaid deposit. And what that Catch-62 rule is basically saying is if you're, unlike this gentleman who just was on the phone with us, if he is not going to be eligible for Social Security at the date of his retirement or age 62, whichever is later, you probably would not want to pay your military deposit because the military service for free will be used in the computation of your pension. The only reason why you'd pay that military deposit under the scenario that you were hired under CSRS prior to October 1st, 82, is if you already have your 40 credits under the Social Security program, or you will have it by the time you turn 62 or date of retirement, whichever is later. So that's the only issue. But if you were hired under CSRS after October 1st, 82, it's just like FERS. If you don't pay the military deposit, it's not used for retirement eligibility or the computation of your pension. So that's where it might be worth paying. Now, the exception are for my retirees. If you're retired from active duty, FERS folks tend to do better by keeping it separate. It might not increase my pension by as much as I'm already getting from the military. And when you retire from FERS, if you pay your military deposit for retirement for the military, you'd have to waive your military retirement. So the point here under FERS is, why would I want to pay money to get less under FERS when I can just keep them separate? Now, the exception to this for FERS folks, if you're a combat disability or if you're a Title 10, reserve retirement at age 60, or if you're getting any money from VA, you don't have to waive that stuff. You only have to waive the money that you're getting from the military. That's another exception to the rule for FERS. It's worth looking into if you're collecting any money from VA or if you're a Title 10 retiree under the reserve program. It's definitely worth paying your military deposit. Or if you have academy service. Academy service usually is not part of your military retirement, so you can pay for your 4 years at the academy. Or if you have more than 30 years of military service, they usually cap out at 30 years of military service in your military pension, so you can pay a deposit for your years above 30. So I'm just quickly going through some exceptions here.
Okay, we have less than 2 minutes, about a minute and a half.
Okay. One last exception is for CSRS. It might be worth looking into combining your military retirement with your CSRS retirement. Your agency can tell you how much you would owe. You can see how much money you'll get in your pension if you include your CSRS service versus if you don't include your military service. And then you just look at what you're giving up for the military and see if it's worth it. It might be worth combining the two if you're CSRS with retire for the military. That's pretty much all I wanted to say on the military stuff, though.
Okay, great. Next week, we're going to play what's called an evergreen show because it's a federal holiday. And I just had an idea. Why don't you give us a email us at NITP Inc. or
Info at NITPInc.com.
Right, info at NITPInc.com. You think I know this stuff. and give us an idea of which of the shows you'd like repeated. And you can go to NITPInc.com and you can look at the archive shows and pick one. And we'll make a deal. We'll go with the one that has the most votes. All righty. That's it. Andrew's given me the high sign. Thanks for listening. James, thanks for all that detailed, great explanation.
Thank you, Bob.
And we'll be live the week after with Karen Schaefer talking about financial planning. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.